Good day, nerds, and welcome to a Cantina Conversation today with our book reviewer, Megan, and Raquel V. Reyes. Raquel is the author of Mango, Mambo, and Murder. And in the story, they discuss Raquel's journey to become an author, as well as how she came up with this story that follows a Cuban-American food anthropologist through a story that involves a murder mystery. This story ties in a great bit of suspense and murder mystery, along with some culinary descriptions that'll probably make you a little hungry. But enough for me. Let's get to the interview.
So we're welcoming Raquel V. Reyes, author of Mango, Mambo, and Murder, out on October 12th. Thank you so much, Raquel, for, you know, taking the time to meet with us today. Just finished this book a couple days ago, so it's very fresh in my mind. And I really enjoyed it. It like I had that definitely that like the homey feeling, and I really liked Miriam as a character. And so, you know, I'm excited to dive a little deeper into it.
Excellent. I'm so thankful to have been invited, and I love that you read it, and I love that you felt a kinship with Miriam. So yeah, let's dig in.
Yeah. So why don't we start off with like a little brief, if you want to do like a little brief summary of the book so that, you know, our listeners can follow along if they're not really familiar with the story.
Sure. You would do that to me. I'm the worst at the condense it into 1 minute soundbite, but let me see. I know. No, like I'm the worst. Like I have to have my little piece of paper and practice it. Okay. Here we go. You ready?
Yep.
Get ready for a new flavor of culinary cozy. Mango, Mambo, and Murder is the first in the Caribbean Kitchen series. Meet Miriam Quiñones, a food anthropologist, her adorable four-year-old son, Manny, Alma, her BFF, and a passive-aggressive mother-in-law you will love to hate. Set in Miami, the gateway to Latin America and the Caribbean, you will experience a melting pot of flavors and characters that lead to murder.
Perfect. Awesome. Yeah, so there's a little, you know, there's quite a bit to unpack here because we've got, you incorporate like the food, the recipes and the culture. And Miriam is, you know, she studied to be a food anthropologist. And so like, there's so much for her to connect with. So how did you draw upon like, you know, your Cuban heritage or, you know, unique experiences to kind of like create the characters, create Miriam and maybe kind of like give the story a little more depth?
Sure. So I have been, this, you know, it's a cozy mystery or what they call a traditional mystery or an amateur sleuth, right? So the main character is not a police in the police force. They're not a private investigator. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just your regular at home kind of person. And I have been a fan of that type of novel for years. I mean, I remember like as a teenager going into the library and discovering that whole mystery section of the library and just devouring various stories. I really couldn't get any traction with them. You know, there was a lot of lip service to, oh, we're so excited to have a Latina character, but maybe they weren't really willing to take that chance on a Latina character. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, thankfully things evolve and up more. And I think that the readership has opened up more, or at least the readership's more vocal. And they're like, no, we want, you know, diverse reads. Give us some diverse reads. So as kind of like a foot in two worlds, you know? So she's very strongly Cuban American, but she's married to a white guy who is like founding father, kind of family. Right. So there's a lot of nice tension in there between Miriam, who's like very working class family where she grew up, and then this family that she married into. Another thing about cozies is that cozies are all about the community and the setting. And so I wanted to put it in some place that I loved and that I knew well, and that's Miami. Mm. And so I made a little village within Miami, and Miami is this huge county. So there's all these little municipalities throughout Miami anyhow. Mm-hmm. So that was easy just to, you know, make a new one.
Yeah, sneak one in.
And
there,
so yeah, I've lost what you told me that you wanted me to answer.
Oh, no, just, no, that was fine. You're kind of answering some of my other questions that I had in mind anyway. So no, just kind of like how, you know, your Cuban heritage kind of like helped in your experiences, like kind of helped you develop the characters or the conflicts that arise. And like, cause obviously the food is totally central to that. So like, kind of like, I just wanted to like explore how you were inspired by like your own background.
So, Miami really is the gateway to the Caribbean and to Latin America. And, as a kid, my mother worked for Cruise Line. Okay. So we would go on trips to the islands all the time. I mean, it was like the perk.
Yeah.
I don't think they do that anymore, but way back in the day, they would like give you free trips all these times. So, you know, I was, you know, always in the islands. And then my dad was very good friends with his Bahamian friend who, and so we would kind of hop over to Nassau and Freeport all the time. Mm-hmm. So I love island life. And I lived in Puerto Rico too. So I lived on the island of Puerto Rico. And I feel so at home there. I feel so at home in the islands. And I was like, I want to bring that to the readers, right? So I developed my character to have, she's a food anthropologist. So she's studying how food cultures and history intersect. And in the Caribbean, you know, there's all these threads, right? So there are all these little separate nations and countries, but there's usually something that goes through them that connects them. It's either colonialism, you know, that you were there, you know, they were settled by the French, or they were settled by the Spanish, or they were settled by the British, right? But these foods that came through there, the platanos, the green plantains, the cassava, the, you know, all of these, the mangoes, the, you know, the citrus. So all of those things tie the Caribbean together, as well as that these foods came over, or not all of them, but some of these foods came over with enslaved Africans. And so that's another thing that connects all of the Caribbean. And so I just love those interconnectedness, you know, that kind of those webs that connect all of those things. And so I made Miriam a food anthropologist for that reason, so that she could specialize and talk about all of those connections. Mm-hmm. And placing her in Miami allows her to do all of that, because we have so many different cultures here, and most of them are from the Caribbean or from Latin America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I've wanted to visit Miami for, you know, a variety of reasons. And I've always wanted to like check out the Caribbean, because it's, I think mostly it's because of the food and just like the atmosphere. It's like the vibe is just, I get the impression that the vibe is just very like, you get a little bit of both. You can relax, but you can also like, you know, there, I imagine there are parts that just kind of come alive and, or make you feel alive. And so definitely like, oh, even just reading some
Miami's
of these.
Miami's a party town. Yeah, of course.
And even like reading some of these, when I was reading some of these recipes, I was like, oh, like, you know, I'm so glad that you included some of them at the back of the book, because I was just like so interested while reading the ingredients and like her thought process. And it's like such a part of who she is. And, you know, her as a character, just like, you know, it's part of her, both her personal life and her professional life is like the food, and just really, she's good at it and she cares about it. And that's like, I think that's such a central part of like a lot of people who are either amateur or professional chefs. It's just, you know, they're passionate about it. And the fact that she's just like, you know, she's right in dead set in, you know, in the environment where she can just really, because her character comes from New York and then she kind of moves back. And so, you know, I got the impression that that was like the one thing that like brought her peace, like from all of this like craziness. And she had to like up and switch her life around, and, you know, and she's kind of the primary caregiver for her son and stuff. But it's like, that seems like that constant, this little stability for her was like just to to lean on the food and, you know.
Yeah, sure. I mean, isn't that like one of the most stressful times in people's lives? Like, right, is like moving.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, marriage and divorce and then moving.
Right.
You know, so definitely I wanted that so that there was that tension, you know, to begin with. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. she's back in Miami. She's happy to be in Miami, but it's not the Miami of her childhood. You know, she's having to deal with her in-laws, which she didn't have to deal with because she was in New York and they didn't come visit. Right. And then, you know, she's kind of given up her chance to be an academic because she really wanted to be a professor. She wanted to write. She wanted to do her research in her cookbook on these recipes and really use her degree for that. And then so she says, okay, I can put that on hold because we can come back to Miami. We're going to have this great opportunity for her husband and for her son to, you know, have family support, which is like really important when you've got like little ones. Yeah. And so she gets here and then she's like, you know, I'm not a little like, did I make the right choice?
Yeah.
You know, like, what did I give up? And right. luckily her BFF, Alma Diaz, is like, no, no, I got it. No, you're going to go, you know, you're going to go do this thing. You know,
yeah,
you're
going to be she's on TV.
And she's like, I'm not a cook. And she's like, what do you mean you're not a cook? You're
yeah, right.
cook. She's like, yeah, but, you know, I'm not like a celebrity chef kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she ends up getting this spot on the morning show, which is the little cooking spot. And then that morphs into her having a YouTube channel where she does a Spanglish version or an English version of it, because the original show that she's on in the mornings is the Spanish language morning show. You know, like Good Morning America, but, you know, in Spanish.
right. Yeah. And I thought it was so funny. And I appreciated how you, when talking about the target audience for the YouTube channel, where it's like millennials or Gen Zers. And with that culture, like, you know, as you go through the generations of people who have come here from those Spanish speaking countries, it's like, they don't always like, they're not always fluent or they understand a lot and they just don't speak it. And, you know, I appreciate it because I'm like, so my mom's Mexican, I'm half Mexican. And it was like that aspect of it, I was like, I could totally relate to because I'm not fluent, but I understand a lot. And it's just like, I kind of think about those missed opportunities now. But my grandma at the time, she just wanted them to all be as American as possible. Growing up on like
survival.
Like growing up in Chicago and trying to, you know, cause I know my uncle, he would get beat up for speaking English. He'd get up beat up for speaking Spanish. And, you know, it was just like, I think that, you know, kind of solidified, you know, them just wanting to like, my grandma just wanting to fit in and like, so that they, you know, to protect them too. But, you know, it's like 30 years later, like, for when I was born, but it's like even before that, and I'm looking back in retrospect, like, yeah, maybe at the time it was like a really smart decision by my grandma, but I'm like, oh man, like nowadays it's like, yeah, I wish I was fluent, of course, but that aspect in the story, I definitely like, I appreciate it. Cause it's just to know that it wasn't just me. That is definitely a generational thing. Even people who come from like only Spanish is spoken in the house, they just didn't grow up like speaking it themselves. They just understand almost all of it, if not all of it. But yeah. And then of course Miriam was like, oh, you know, I want to avoid that with her son, with Manny.
And that's a little bit of friction with the in-laws, with the mother-in-law, you know, she's like, why are you always speaking to your son in Spanish? And she's like, you know, well, she wants to make sure that that side of his culture has a strong foundation because, you know, it's so easy. And it is true. And I think that's something that a lot of us share. And I'll go ahead and use, you know, Latinx, or that's kind of like the thread of if you're second generation or third generation, that maybe, you know, the push so much to succeed and survive and assimilate, you know, and only speak in English was a little bit of a detriment to our having like a solid foundation and truly embracing that part of our heritage, you know? And so, and that's not just, that's, you know, any immigrant who comes to the United States. I mean, that's always the, the thing, you know, it's like, do well in school, get out there, and to do well in school, you've got to speak English. And, you know, and so I think that that's a commonality that I think a lot of people can identify with as one of the little, you know, threads in the book.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's why when I, you know, there was the book you wrote, like, you know, the dialogue, a lot of the dialogue was in Spanish. And I'm like, I loved it. I was like, all right. Like, it was just a little exciting to like hear a little like or read little clips in the native tongue. And it just kind of like added that significance to like, it helped me connect to her. But then it was also like, you know, seeing how, her as a character, like how much that is a part of her. And, you know, she's making a point to also like reconnect with that part of her herself, like back home, like she's back where she was from. And then, just also like how you said, like passing that down to her son and like going back to the mother-in-law, oh my God, there were so many times in the book where I was like, oh God, just let her have it, Miriam. Like she is a, like, just let right? her have it. Just like give it to her. And I was just like, she's a much better woman than I for, you know, keep maintaining her composure and keeping her cool. And just some of the things that Marjorie said to her, I was like, Jesus, like, oh my God, like what, you know.
And I'm going to tell you for real that some of those were very close to things that I went through and that like people actually said to me.
That's so wild. Yeah.
Yes. It is not fiction. let me say that it's not fiction. But yeah, no, so you know, this is a series. You know, I'm already working on book two, which will be out nice. In October, the same date, you know, the following year. So awesome. You know, Miriam couldn't you know rip her a new one in book one
because right, you know, right away kind of, right.
You know, I have to, you know, stretch that tension out.
That's
you know,
true,
over
yeah.
a couple of books. Good, and also this woman, her mother-in-law is not all of a sudden going to become like this kindly, saintly woman.
Right. Right. Yeah. Happen. Yeah. It's not going to happen overnight for sure. It would be, yeah, no, I'm glad that a book two, I mean, I assumed a book two was in the works, but it's good to know that, you know, because I'm interested to see Marjorie's character trajectory following the events of this one. And, you know, we do want to be like spoiler free, but yeah, it's kind of like just with all the characters and the relationships and Miriam having to navigate that and observe relationships that maybe she's kind of like, why don't I get that treatment? Like, why, you know, so to kind of see, I'm excited to see how Marjorie comes out of the drama or the,
and you know,
the, you know, resolution.
And her husband's kind of naive. Yeah, Miriam's husband yeah. is Robert, and she calls him Robert and she calls him Roberto, you know, depending because, mm-hmm. you know, you code switch between English and
yeah.
Spanish. You know, he's kind of like that classic, my mom didn't say that.
Yeah.
No, mom didn't mean that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have like, fun well, with it. There are several witnesses. Yeah. Like right. usually, although sometimes there are none and sometimes it's like very like clear and it's just like, oh my God. Like, I was like, whew. So you have a bunch of published like short stories, correct?
Yeah. I've actually got two stories coming out in anthologies right around the same time as Mango Mambo and Murder debuts. So okay. It's kind of like wild and great all of the same, you know, like,
like it's like, then, yeah, I got multiple things to keep an eye on to see how they do.
Yeah, so I've got a short story in Midnight Hour, which is coming out in November, which this is an anthology of a chilling anthology of crime fiction from 20 authors of color, and this is super fun. My story in this one happens at a medianoche sandwich contest, which, you know, a medianoche is the classic Cuban sandwich that if you come to Miami, you have to have.
Yeah.
And then the other one, short story that I have coming out, which comes out, that anthology comes out the day before Mango Mambo and Murder, is in an anthology called Trouble No More, which is a Southern rock anthology. All of the songs are titles from Allman Brothers. songs. Oh. And the one I have is called Multicolored Lady. And that was a real fun one too. So, I mean, you're thinking Southern rock. What's that about?
You're right.
My mom, my mother was Southern. My parentage is like the I Love Lucy show. My dad is handsome Cuban man. And my mom was, had a great laugh and a redhead. So yeah. I am the I Love Lucy completely. And like, I remember watching them on reruns and feeling represented because there weren't any other Cuban Americans in TV land represented in books. That, like, it wasn't that was so representation is so important.
Yeah.
And I know that from my own life. You know, I know seeing a family that looked like mine, mm-hmm. as crazy as it was, you know, with my dad's accent and, you know, that whole tension between those two different cultures. But seeing that represented in the creative arts, in entertainment, in the visual, that was so important to me. And knowing that I had, you know, a place in the world,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes growing up, you don't feel like that if you don't have some validation coming at you. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm glad, like, you know, that it's so much more diverse now. I think it's just, you know, because looking back, it's like, and plus, like, who knows what, if you didn't have that, not just like the representation, not just like making you feel like, you know, you do have a place in the world, like you're being kind of a little, your family makeup is being recognized a little bit. It's like, who knows, like, then that also having that type of representation also like lets you know, like, you can put your work out into the world. Like, you can, you don't have to be like white, you don't have to be a man, you can, like, there's a spot for you, just like at some point it's somewhere at some point they will be like, you know. And there's like so many stories to tell, and I think now, you know, it's, they're easier to find, I think, the different types of, you know, the diversity and all that, but yeah. And that's like, that's so cool though that, you know, I Love Lucy was it for you, because that was such an iconic show.
Yeah.
And I think it was iconic for so many reasons, including that.
Oh my god, it was like, you know, after school, I'd come home and it was like either soap operas or you got black and white reruns.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this was like before cable. So I am dating myself a little bit, but you know, there was no like, well, there was cable, but like, you know, not everybody had cable. like, you know, those were your choices. You get to watch, you know, General Hospital or you get to watch, you know, these black and white reruns. So anyway.
I mean, that'll resonate with a lot of people anyway too, because this is Liz, like an adult novel, right? It's not like young adult. It, like, your target audience is like older,
right? No, I mean, look, there's no violence, there's no on-page sex on there, so yes, I mean, I think a teenager could certainly pick it up and it wouldn't be any big deal, you know, but
right.
I don't know if that would interest them, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And you know, like YA has done such amazing stuff with diversity. I mean, it's wonderful. Like, I wish it was like that when I had been growing up. Like, you know, I was reading Agatha Christie because there weren't really novels geared towards teens. Like, when I was growing up, there really were. You know, it was like little kid books or like grown up books.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy because I think young adult is just like, it's become just such a popular genre or audience target. So when I going back to like your short stories, like, so did you, what made you kind of switch gears, or like, are you used to writing short stories?
Short,
like, why
stories.
Did you want to start a novel?
I've always loved short stories I've always loved short stories. And the reason why I love short stories is because I read at night and, you know, sometimes I only get a chapter or two in before, like, you know, I go to sleep. But with a short story, you get the whole thing. And you get all of the satisfaction, you know, you get the character development, the world building, you know, you get the crime, you get the resolution, you know, I just love that little meat package that you get with the short stories. And it's a different skill than writing a full length novel.
Oh, for sure. You know? Yeah.
And so I think it's important to have both of those skills. And, you know, once you spend, you know, however long it takes you to write this book, 6 months to a year, however long it takes you, and you go through all these revisions and la, 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 and it goes to an agent and it's sitting out there waiting to do whatever it's going to do. What do? You don't just like sit there drumming your fingers. You know, you write these little things, you know, and I also like, you know, my cozy mystery, my traditional mystery has a lot of fun in it. And it really fits that subgenre. And so with my short stories, I get to go a little darker, not super dark. I'm not noir by any means. But, you know, I get to play a little bit more outside of the cozy label.
Sure.
You know, and that, you know, that helps keep me fresh. And I think it keeps my writing fresh and it keeps me engaged. And I hope it keeps my readers engaged, too, to be able to have this little, you know, nugget, you know, I love short
stories. No, I'm a fan of short stories for that same reason where you know, you get it all in that little package. But it's also like, you know, sometimes you get like open ended ones or you're just like, oh, I want more. Like, but like, that's kind of the fun of it. That's part of it. Just to, you know, you kind of like have to take a moment to be like, huh. Like it's, you know, cause that's it. That's where it is. Like,
well, and some authors have recurring characters, you know, so that character that they had in that story will have another story somewhere down the line. Mm-hmm, and, you know, and then the whole idea of maybe eventually taking all of the short stories and putting it together in a collection, you know, because there are threads to my short story that kind of connect with other ones. They're not obvious, but I know them, and I'm always thinking, well, that person could be such and such a somebody's primo, or, you know, that is their cousin, and this is how I could relate and connect all these stories together.
No, that's fun too, and it'd be kind of neat if like your readers picked up on that too,
or like, you know, I just have them pass by the same place, you know, like in the same story, you know, so you all know it's happening in Miami or whatever, you know.
No, that's so cool. Like to do little things like that. So you like the cozy mystery type genre. What made you want to like, was it always your plan to incorporate the whole food aspect into this genre, or did you come across it, you know, in the writing process or the thinking process?
Really. I, one of my first stories that I wrote was set in Miami, but definitely didn't have, I mean, it had mention of food, but it wasn't like a culinary cozy, you know? And I mean, I wrote it a little bit because I know that there's a readership for that. You know what I'm saying? And I love to represent the food that I love. You know, I'd love to be able to represent Cuban food and Puerto Rican food and Dominican food.
Yeah.
And Haitian food and Jamaican food. And, you know, and I love that part of it. But more important for me with making this a culinary cozy was to do that whole food anthropology bit. Like, it was really important for me, for my main character, to be an academic. And so how would I do that and have that culture? You know, so we've got like food culture, and I wanted her to be an academic. And I was like, you know, well, I can't just have her be a one-off, write a cookbook type of person. Like, I didn't see how that was going to like go across a whole series. You know what I mean? Right. And there's others, you know, I'm a big fan of the Key West Food Critic series. I love that series. And, but I'm just like, I'm not going to like, you know, be a copycat and like make another food critic, you know? So, I definitely had to be a little creative with that. And when I landed on food anthropology, I was like, oh, yes. This is it. This does everything that I want it to do.
Nice.
You know,
yeah.
She gets to be a Latina. She gets to be an academic, you know, which I think is important to have aspirational characters for readers, you know, and then she gets to talk about all of the stuff that I kind of geek out on, which is like, well, why do we eat this and where did this come from?
Yeah.
And why is it prepared like this here and prepared like that there? And why does that, why is it called fufu there and mofongo there? And, you know, like, I love that stuff.
Yeah. No, it is interesting too. I can be kind of a dork at times about, you know, little just things that I'm not, you know, I'm not familiar with. I think I first tried Indian food, like for the first time, I think it was, maybe 8 years ago that I first had Indian food, and then I ended up like loving a lot of it. And, but it's also interesting. Like once I got to know some of those dishes, it was just like, holy shit. Like they put so much in it. Like there's so many different spices, and there's like, if you, you know, you get into down the rabbit hole and watching videos of how they're being made, and it's just like, oh, holy crap. But then you can also like compare it to other cultures, like, you know, I've seen the same type of spices and the same kind of cooking styles and methods, like, you know, kind of being used in other cultures too. So no, it's, yeah, I, no, I'm, I can share that nerdiness with you there of like learning, you know, going a little deeper into the food. And it's so crazy how complex it could be, the cooking process, the ingredient collecting process, and like how much, how many mistakes do people have to, you know, make to get it right, to get all these like extraordinary and unique dishes, you know, that sets them apart. And I grew up like my dad, he's, I don't want to, you know, he's like an amateur chef, but he's like definitely a foodie, and he knows how to do food. And he, you know, even like now, he's in his early 60s and he still is, you know, learning new things and kind of looking out for new ways to do stuff. I think it's just therapeutic for him. Sure. But it's also funny because my, you know, my mom, she doesn't cook. Like she's not like the, you know, quit to, she kind of like loses some Mexican, mom points, I guess, for that. But she doesn't really cook. She does like guacamole. I got a guacamole recipe from her, and she home deep fries tortilla chips. So she kind of, you know, she cuts the corn tortillas and she deep fries them, and they come out like amazing. And so, you know, but it was funny, 'cause like then, well, I still get the recipes. I still get that authenticity because, my dad just cooks my mom's food. Like he just takes those recipes and, you know, we do the whole, you know, we have to join the assembly line around Christmas time because he makes the tamales and, it's,
tamales,
you know,
right?
Yeah. I know when you, I was hoping you were going to put that recipe in the back of the book when you were talking about it. I was like, it's like, oh man, I wonder like how, you know, what they do, but it's, I, you know, I just, and it's so crazy.
Right.
To, like,
so we all have tamales, right? You know, tamales, we have, but all our tamales are different, right?
Yeah.
You know, are they wrapped in corn husk? Are they wrapped in plantain leaves? You know, like,
yum.
Do you put pork in them? Do you put beef in them? Chorizo, you know, I love that.
Yeah.
You know, we have that similarity and yet it's different.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's so crazy. I love it. 'Cause like I'm like growing up, it's like, oh yeah, like, with tamales, it's like, yeah, that's Christmas time. But then like when I ended up, like I started to work downtown for a couple years, and a lot of my coworkers were, you know, people of color, and they knew like the spots, like, you know, in the specific neighborhoods in the city, like with the tamale lady or, you know, and other like small businesses. And so when I tried theirs, I was like, oh, like, it's like such a, like a nice, even then, like regionally, it's like, you know, they got it fresh. 'Cause with my dad, you know, we make them ahead of time. He makes like, we make dozens of them, and then we pass them out to family members
freezer.
And friends. Yeah. We freeze them. And so, but unfortunately I think they dry out a little bit. And so like for the longest time, I just thought, you know, I didn't, then once I started trying like, you know, fresh tamales, like from the corner cart, and it was just like, oh man, like, holy crap. Like, this is like a new world.
Wow,
it's like,
so good,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, of course, like, and then my
fresh
dad,
he does so good.
Yeah, right. And I think that was the first time I had cheese and hot peppers in a tamale. I think it's because my dad always does beef and pork, and you have to like buy the special cheese for it too. So I was just like, oh man, like I think I like the meatless ones. Like it was, yeah. It's that's why when you know Miriam got her Thea's recipe, I was just like, oh, is it here? No, damn it! Like you know, it's like, oh, it's okay. Like I'll just have to, you know. Also, you know, maybe you sprinkle some more surprises in like the next book.
Eventually, there will be probably maybe this third story will happen maybe around Christmas time. So then I'll get to do a little bit more of like the traditional Christmas recipes that we have. Because like, you know, we have our Puerto Rican, my husband's Puerto Rican, and we have a Puerto Rican neighbor who, you know, Christmas comes and, well, we make coquito. And we give coquito to our neighbors, which
so
is,
good.
You know, the coconut cream and rum. And it's delicious.
So good.
Almond cinnamon. It's so good. I know. Mm-hmm. But she, our neighbor down a few houses, she does, you know, basically tamales for Christmas. And so she takes your order. She's like, okay, I'm making, how many do you want? And so, you know, we get this great bag of them. Christmas night, and it's great. And like, I kind of, I feel like that needs to be in there because food is also so much about sharing, you know?
Yeah, it is. And it's like something you made and it's something that like you put care into and that you are giving to another person. And you're just, you know, you're hoping that you're taking pride of it because like you, that it has your name on it. And like this, that's what I loved about it too, where, and it's so universal, I think. Which is just food and cooking. It's kind of like how you mentioned before, like different cultures. It's like, what are they doing differently? Why is it this way? But that's like the beauty of it too, or yeah, like the sharing part of it, the universal aspect of it, you know, just food is a different type of like homemade gift. You know, if I had the time,
it's a love language,
totally,
you know?
Yeah, it is. I'm pretty sure it's my husband's love language. Cause when it comes to food, he's always like, that's what he, you know, even though sometimes I could care less, like, or I would be none the wiser about a particular thing about a meal that he's making. He always asks me, he's like, oh, do you want this? Do you want that? And I'm like, I'm good. And he'd be like, no, but what do you want? And I'm just like, whatever is good, like whatever you got going on or whatever's more convenient, like he'd, you know. And, you know, cause that's his, like, he takes it very seriously. And for me, sometimes, you know, I guess I was just kind of spoiled growing up. You know, I was good with whatever my dad made. So it was just like, no, it's like, it's fine. Like, I'm sure it's going to be great. I love food. I love like learning and seeing different types of food and, you know, like how, I just like appreciated how you kind of like you had that such a part of her character. And I, you know, I feel like you couldn't do like a character, a woman of color without sneaking that in there one way or the other. And to make it like part of her personality, part of who she is as a person. And then I love like just how relatable she is. Cause she's like, she doubts herself like all the time, or she's just like, you know, I'm not funny. What are you talking about? Or even, you know, she kind of gets carried away with the whole like suspecting of Robert and wondering what he's up to and, you know, why has he changed so much or like once since they moved down there and things like that.
I think that's part of like, you know, you want to have something. I mean, maybe not every reader will identify with that because maybe they haven't gone through it, but mm-hmm. I think it is very relatable in that your whole life is in upheaval. You know, you've moved, everything's still in boxes. You're having to deal with these new in-laws, you know, and then there's this pressure of this job. And then you got to get this kid to go, if you can find this preschool for the kid. And, you know, you also, you know, you have to be a caregiver to this. And I think there's something about that, you know, you just start to, I don't want to say that she was depressed in the beginning, but I think that she's just like overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know, and I think sometimes when that happens, you know, you begin to be like, wait, did I read that right? Is there something going on?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, wait, that's new. Why is that there? And so I hope people can relate to that because I think we've all gone through that, you know, where you're just like, not your best self because of all these other influences that are around you that are beyond your control.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
And it kind of puts you a little off balance.
Yeah.
So, but she finds her balance in the end. I think. Yeah. I feel like she comes into her own at the end.
Like, oh yay.
Right? I hope so. I hope that the people will hang in there because she gets to say her words and do a couple of, you know, things. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it does also get kind of her attitude towards the end also just very, very funny. It's very funny once she
she gets more confidence, you know, she started this new job that she has not trained for, you know, she's never been on TV and here she is got to be in front of this camera and read a teleprompter and, you know, be this, you know, hostess, you know, with the mostest kind of thing. And this, but I think by the end, she, you know, gains her confidence. And I hope that people will enjoy her character arc in this book, but also through the series of how she really, you know, becomes the confident woman that she has within her, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, she's having to change from being a very bookish person because of doing all of this research to now she's like this personality where people are like noticing her and like she's at the grocery store picking out fruit and somebody's across the thing, you know, clicking a photo of her and she's like,
it's so funny. I know. I thought that was so funny too because of the milk mustache thing and she kind of just went with it. Like, she's like, yeah, not my choice, but okay. So what kind of advice would you give to her, to Miriam?
Wow. What kind of advice would I give to Miriam? Yes. Well, I guess mostly it's about the mother-in-law to really have strong boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to not be afraid to speak up.
Yeah.
Because it's really important that kind of like passive aggressiveness to not take that. And especially if you have a child or a young person there, to not let them see you, you know, kind of getting dissed.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I would say, you know, and also just to be grab the bull by the horns because she's got a great opportunity with this new career of hers to get what she wanted in the beginning, which is to do her cookbook and her research about the African diaspora and the Caribbean diaspora. And I think, you know, further down the line, I hope that that happens for her. But
awesome. So just a couple more questions before we wrap up here. So what were your favorite parts to write and like, what were the more challenging parts to write?
The hardest challenges were writing the recipes for sure.
Oh, okay.
Because I wrote a little bit of, you know, personal history about some of them or cultural history about some of them. But also when you're writing this recipe, you're like when I cook, I just throw stuff in there. Like I know that like, oh, that needs a little salt. Let me put some salt in there. That needs more cumin. You know, I like garlic. We're going to put a bunch of garlic in there, you know, but then to write the recipe, you have to measure it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like for a little while, I'm like test kitchen. I'm like, okay, like I'm lucky I have a great tropical supermarket near me. So I go there, I load up with stuff. I come home on a Sunday. I'm like, okay, I got to write this thing.
Yeah.
It's that one teaspoon. Okay. No, that doesn't taste enough. Okay. So it's 1.5 teaspoons. So writing the recipes was the hardest part. The most enjoyable part for me was like the little fun bits that don't necessarily have to do with the plot. I mean, they do because there's some little clues and so forth in there, but like the settings, like, so she goes to the Botanica and she goes to her cousin's little restaurant. And so getting to write those little bits and putting in those little very specific to Miami and very specific to our Cuban American culture, there was a real satisfaction in being able to like put those little tidbits throughout the whole story. That was really enjoyable.
Yeah. No, and you really like descriptive and your storytelling where I I had no problem picturing it in my head, okay. You know, just the environment, like the, you know, just the weather and the, you know, just the vibe in general. It was so easy to picture, even though it was a little fantasy town, like, you know, you snuck into the Miami region. It was easy to picture, like, you know, it in my head as I was like traveling along with Miriam and with Manny, you know? And so, what can we expect from the next installment?
Okay, so I am writing book two. Book two happens during Halloween, but not, it's not a Halloween story. It's just one of the settings. And a lot of our same characters from book one show up for book two. And so if there were any loose ends in book one, they are definitely tied up in book two.
All right.
And so I can't give any much more away than
right.
that. But Miriam is much more like, she's in her pattern. She goes to her studio shoot. You know, she's kind of got all of that rhythm. And, you know, cozies love to have animals in them. So we have an animal in our first one, and there is another animal in our second one, you know, we have to, there's a whole cat dog battle between you know, cozy readers, you know, I'm just saying people are team canine or team feline.
Sure.
So I want to make everybody happy.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy.
Funny.
And there's more recipes, of course.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There's going to be a couple of Haitian recipes. And maybe a Jamaican recipe. Like, actually, the scene that I just finished writing is a key and salt fish, which is like the national dish of Jamaica. And I've got some Jamaican neighbors. And so I'm like, can I get them to teach me that dish? So
Because
I want to be authentic. Like, I don't want to, like, you know, Americanize it.
No, you know? And you don't want to just Google everything.
If it needs two Scotch bonnet peppers in it, we got to put two Scotch bonnet peppers
in it. No, so. Can't skimp out. People will know. Your Jamaican readers will be like, wait a second.
Like, that doesn't have any heat to it.
Yeah. That's awesome. So before we, sign off here, do you have any like other projects or things that you want to promote? Are you in social media, all that good stuff?
I do a blog with two other Florida cozy author writers, and it's called Cozy Florida. So people can go there. You know, we each take a week. And so that's fun. We do a lot of fun stuff over there. We have giveaways and so forth. You know, I'm sure you'll put the link up for my newsletter.
Yeah.
And I have the two anthologies that are coming out. And yeah, there's always fun stuff. I'm the co-chair for Sleuth Fest, which is a mystery writers conference. And so, you know, if you follow me on social media, you'll see books, and conference. So I plug the conference, and I love it. It's like, you know, writing is such a solitary act, but writers love to gather and find their group and their people.
Yeah.
And that networking. And that's the reason why conferences are so great. Right. So, yeah.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I'll have to keep a lookout for your short stories then, because, you know, I do like short stories, and I really enjoyed, you know, this novel and, you know, the characters, like, and the recipes. I definitely want to, like, you know, see if I'm feeling ambitious one of these days to try out something.
The picadillo is super easy. You can so try the picadillo. The picadillo is super easy to make. Make that one first. And then you can take the picadillo and you can put it inside an empanada.
Like, just saying, baby steps for me, though, you know.
The picadillo. You can do that. I promise.
The picadillo. Okay. All right. No, because I got the book. I got the hardcover, so I'll be able to, like, flip back and forth and see, you know. Well, no problem. I got it. I'll be confident. And then I'll, you know, maybe I'll take a picture and I'll tag you.
And tag me. Yeah.
Be like, I did it.
You're going to love it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to that. So thank you, Raquel V. Reyes. Mango Mambo and Murder out October 12th. People who like the cozy murder mysteries, any people who like are foodies, or even readers from, you know, like the Caribbean or Spanish speaking countries, you know, not necessarily Cuban, but because you integrate some other things in there, you know, any of those groups will, you know, this book is right up your alley. And yeah, we'll keep an eye out for number two, and I'll have to check out, I'm definitely going to try this recipe. I'm going to check out, you know, your short stories too, but thank you so much.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks, Megan. It was great fun.
All right, and thanks for listening to this Cantina Conversation. As always, go ahead and join us over at thenerdcantina.com/community to join our group and continue conversations, and join us for our regular weekly nerd news recaps. Until next time, talk to you later, nerds.